Dave, great to have you here. Can you tell us a bit about who you are and what you're doing?
So my name's Dave, and I graduated from Southampton University just a couple of months ago, so it's quite nice to be back on our turf. And when I graduated, I worked in the water industry for a couple of months, and now I work with a charity going around speaking at CU events all over the country, so I spend my time doing this kind of thing a lot.
Okay, and your best memory of being here in Southampton?
Best memory of being here at Southampton, I was very heavily involved in the hockey club while I was here. And in my final year, at the end of my fourth year here, we got double promotion for the first 11. So that would be probably right up there as my finest memory of my time at uni.
Great, thanks, Dave. We're looking forward to hearing you speak, so I'll hand over to you.
Great, thanks very much, Tom. And thanks very much for the CU for putting on this great event. I hope you're enjoying your lunch. It really is great to be back on home turf back here at Southampton. It really does feel like coming home. I was here for 4 years doing a Master's in Environmental Sciences and spending loads of my time, like I said, involved in the hockey club and involved in the CU. And there's lots of fond memories I've got of my time at uni, lots of things I look back on very fondly. I really did love my time here. I wonder what your favourite things about university life might be, what you most love about being at uni. I think some people will probably say the social life of university is right up there as one of the very best things. The chance to spend all day playing FIFA, all night partying, and accumulate hundreds of Facebook friends. The social life of university can be a lot of fun. Some people would say it's the independence of university that's the best thing about being at uni. The chance to be free from teachers looking over our shoulders and from parents' expectations. Or maybe it's your course that is your favourite thing about university. Let's be honest, that makes you a bit of a nerd. But if you sit in those lectures, if you do those labs, or you write those essays, and your mind feels alive, and you just feel like this is what I was meant to be doing, maybe your course is the favourite thing about university. Or maybe it's kind of just the broader culture of university. All of those things kind of put together is what you really love about uni. Well, I think if I asked a lot of my friends who graduated with me, who graduated at the same time as me, what their favourite thing about university is or was, I think a lot of them would have said, particularly a lot of the ones in the hockey club, would have said their favourite thing about university was clowns and jesters. The best memories were all in that place from their time at uni. I remember in my first year, one of the hockey guys had a column in the Wessex Scene. And one issue, he devoted his entire column to writing about how amazing jesters was. And he said this, he said, "The real beauty of jesters is in freedom, and the freedom that jesters offers." And he went on to write about how that there were freedom on so many levels in jesters. There's freedom from rules, you know, kind of behaviour that wouldn't be normally accepted in other clubs or just in society in general, kind of gets looked on a bit more leniently. There's a freedom of choice. You can drink a beer, you can drink water, you can drink a jesticle. You can hang out inside, you can chat outside, you can dance, sort of, on the dance floor. And there's a freedom of cultural expectations as well. Where else could you go and in one evening rub shoulders with people wearing chinos, shirts and ties who are from a sports club, and people who are wearing trainers, jeans and a hoodie who've ended up going out by accident that night? But, well, regardless of whether you absolutely love jesters or whether you'd spend the rest of your days quite happily never smelling that unique smell ever again, there does seem to be a great deal of freedom, a great deal of fun offered by jesters, by university, or by life in general that Christianity would seemingly just prohibit. If I was to suggest to a lot of people the idea of becoming a Christian, wouldn't all of that change? Wouldn't all of that freedom disappear? What would happen to the sex, drugs, and rock and roll? Don't Christians believe, after all, that sex is a good thing, but something that should only happen within a marriage? And so someone might say, at the idea of becoming a Christian, wouldn't my freedom to enjoy great sexual experiences be compromised? And don't Christians believe in not getting hammered, in just saying no to drugs? And so someone might say, if I became a Christian, wouldn't my freedom to escape everything, to just go out and enjoy myself, be compromised? And, well, don't Christians kind of conform to a kind of narrow cultural niche? And so someone might say, if I had to become a Christian, wouldn't my freedom for self-expression be compromised, whether it be rock and roll, rave, country or classical? Wouldn't I have to become part of this cultural niche, hang out with only Christians and listen to naff Christian music all the time? So surely Jesus does spoil all the fun because Jesus takes away our freedom. Well, let me explain for a few moments why I've found it to be the total opposite. You see, we all do long for freedom. I think that is something that's deep within our hearts, that we all long for freedom. And the way we pursue that is we follow what seems to offer us freedom. And I think in the society that we live in, the things that we most see offering us freedom are probably sex and power and wealth. You see, sex would offer us a freedom from loneliness and a freedom from boredom by offering us intimacy and exciting experiences. Power would offer us a freedom from insignificance by offering us influence and esteem. But for a moment, let's just think a little bit more about the freedom that might be offered by money. You see, money would seem to offer freedom in security for the future, the freedom to not have to worry about where the next paycheck is coming from or where the next student loan is coming from. And it would also seem to offer us a freedom for the present, the ability to be able to do what we want, to buy what we want, to own what we want, to go where we want, to live where we want. Money would seem, at least, to offer us great freedom. But you see, that freedom that money offers doesn't really free us at all, because we end up becoming enslaved to it if that is the only freedom we can pursue. The security that money might seem to offer, well, risk never be totally eliminated. And so we become enslaved to trying to eliminate every kind of risk that might occur. And the freedom of immediately being able to get what we want, do what we want, go where we want, live where we want, well, there's always going to be something out of our reach, always something too expensive. And so we end up becoming enslaved to earning more. And how many people is that true of today? J.D. Rockefeller was one of the wealthiest men alive. When someone asked him, how much money is enough? And he simply responded, just a little bit more. You see, when we devote ourselves to something that would seem to offer us freedom, that seems to promise us freedom, we find ourselves much less free than we originally thought we would be. But we can't help but be devoted to something. I think that is just as much as our desire for freedom in the very nature of who we are. We are devotion machines. We want to be devoted to something. Why else would Bob Dylan write, "You're going to have to serve somebody"? Yes, indeed. You're going to have to serve somebody. It may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're going to have to serve somebody. So the question is not whether or not we devote ourselves to something. The question is what we would devote ourselves to that would deserve our devotion and offer us real freedom in the light of that devotion. Well, this kind of devotion to money that we see in much of society today isn't a new thing. In first century Israel, the nation of Israel was under Roman occupation. And as they were under Roman occupation, the Romans would employ tax collectors from amongst the Jewish people in order to kind of gain some of the wealth of the nation and take it back to Rome. So the Romans would employ Jewish tax collectors. Now, the rewards for these tax collectors were huge. They would be able to line their pockets with as much as they want by charging the people they were collecting taxes from with as much as they wanted to. Today, we'd call that extortion, but at the time, it was just the way things were. But the costs were equally as huge. You see, the people who these tax collectors would be exploiting, the people who these tax collectors would be taking the money from, would accuse them of backstabbing, betraying their nation. It would be a betrayal of their family and everything they knew. And one of these such tax collectors was a guy named Zacchaeus, who we read about in the biography of Jesus' life that's written by Luke in the New Testament. Now, Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector, so he would have been one of the most hated people around. But when Jesus came to his town of Judea, he wanted to see what all the fuss was about. He wanted to see who this Jesus was. But there were so many crowds around him that Zacchaeus, this short-ass little tax collector, couldn't see him. Now, normally, if you're the short one in a crowd, you just kind of work your way to the front. I've seen people do that at gigs all the time. But he was so hated by the culture he was in that he couldn't get near him to see him. So he runs ahead and climbs a sycamore tree so he can see over the crowd. Now, that sounds a little funny to us, but the significance of that in the society he was living was even more significant, because he lived in a culture of honor. And for a grown man to do something as ridiculous as climb a tree just to see someone else would have exposed himself to even more ridicule than he already lived under for being a tax collector. And so Zacchaeus is hanging on in this tree just to try and get a glimpse of who Jesus is. And Jesus confronts him. Jesus says to him, "Come down from the tree. I want to eat at your house. I want to honor you, even though no one else will." The people who are around him all grumbled about this. Why is Jesus going in and sitting and eating with this sinner? Why is he honoring him? But Zacchaeus' reaction was totally different, because Zacchaeus gave away all of that money that he'd earned, all of that money he'd exploited out of the people around him. He gave it all away. He gave it all back. He tried to do something to right all the wrongs that he'd committed. But he wasn't doing it so that he would get into a good place in and of himself. He was doing because Jesus had transformed him. How do we know that Jesus could have transformed the life of Zacchaeus? Because he was free to give everything away. He did it voluntarily. You see, if you can't give it away, if you can't give away what you've devoted your whole life to getting, what your whole existence has been orientated around for so long, what you've sacrificed for, if you can't give it away, then you don't own it, and it owns you. But Zacchaeus was so content, he was so thrilled just to be in the presence of his Creator, the God who called him by name, who told him to get down from the tree, that everything else lost its grip on him, even his wealth. Now, if I'm honest with you, I've never been as devoted or obsessed with wealth as Zacchaeus was. But I was devoted to performance at a time. I was utterly devoted to how I was performing academically, how I was devoting sportingly, how I was performing in every aspect of my life. I was totally devoted to how I was performing. And the result of that was it made me totally isolated from people. I would distance myself from people because I knew that they could let me down, and I didn't want to give anyone the chance to do that. And the other consequence was that I became hugely angry. Angry at the sight of anything that might alter or hinder my performance in any way. But all that I found was that such devotion led me to a guilt for the past, for every time that I had messed up or made any kind of mistake, and a fear for the future, for any potential failure that I might make. But it all changed because of Jesus. When my life became about him and what he's done, instead of about me and what my performance could do, everything changed. See, Jesus offers a forgiveness for the past, so that instead of being wrapped by guilt all the time, I could know that I've got peace. Jesus offers us a hope for the future, one that we could never hope to attain for ourselves by our own performance. And so instead of fear for the future, I was offered assurance, and I didn't have to fear all the time. Freedom from guilt, freedom from fear, freedom from insecurity. That's real freedom. That was the real freedom that I found in Jesus Christ. Not a freedom, not a system of works that kind of controlled who I am,
but a freedom that actually liberated me. So the question that Jesus might be asking today would be that, would you give your life to him so that he can set you free? Now, it may be that you don't feel ready to answer that question here today, that you'd have some of your own questions to ask. Can I encourage you, text them in a few moments' time. I'll do my best to answer them. Or can I also encourage you to ask those questions of Jesus yourself? On your tables, you've got these black books. This is a copy of the Gospel of Mark, the biography of Jesus' life that's found in the Bible. If you've got questions that you want to ask to Jesus before you'd be prepared to answer the questions that he might ask of you, can I encourage you, take that away with you. It's totally free. And see for yourself what he's like. See how he measures up to the questions that you've got. But if you're ready to answer that question that Jesus might be posing today, of will you give your life to him so that he can set you free? Can I encourage you to take that opportunity to answer that question today?